It's Alex, I think.
All right, so someone's probably, I didn't communicate to the front office, they, because they close at 4:30 or 4. Sorry, everyone. Welcome. We have more chairs over here if you'd like, and we can spread those out.
Go that way. I watched the court.
We're trying to make lemonade here, so.
You're just crossing J's over there. He probably went on the other bus. It's not like a big ball. I just want to be on the other.
We'll provide updates on my projects if you want.
So, with that, I turn over to you to start
the meeting.
Yes.
Call the meeting to order. We do not yet have a quorum. Can't approve the business. Which brings us to the public comment section.
Do we do the roll call? We don't get everybody here yet, right?
We know we don't have a quorum.
So, Amy, can I ask you to, oh, you need to get her plugged in?
It's okay.
We say we have a public comment opportunity at the head of the table.
Yeah.
Make that nice and easy for people to get in and out. Apologize for our confined spaces. We just wanted to, you know, it was rainy outside. We wanted to make it feel homey. Cozy, yes. And we've rectified the conflict with our standard meeting room in the future, in perpetuity, I hope. But we couldn't move all new staff training out of that room. And, got into a little glitch there. So at this time, we have our public comment period that Jim will settle. So if you do want to make a public comment, we'll ask you to come up to the head of the table. If you're online and listening, the volume, it's always bad. So I'm just going to say it. So speak up so that we can try to capture it the best we can. We limit it to.
Would you like to sort of repeat what we discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on the Heritage Farm.
Yeah.
So my name's Sharon Gosby. I'm a community gardener there, and I was on the original master plan. There it's still on here. Community gardens lease garden plots for food production for personal use. Garden plots may be relocated and or managed differently to ensure equitable access to all members of the public. I don't want them to be moved because just like it says in the report, it takes a lot of work as well as money to make the land grow stuff. You know, I've been there for 8 years on one plot, and I'm still dealing with clay and despite cover crop and all that. And there's 80 to 90 year olds. So if you, and it was a volunteer effort. So those 88 plots were mostly built by the farm manager and master gardeners and a lot of different community members. And so I think it's a waste of money, and I think it's a really bad idea to move them. There's been a wait list for several years, and actually off of 68th Street on that 6 acres would be a perfect place to do handicapped accessible community garden beds, but to add them, and that was on the original survey. I was involved in 2019. That is supported by the community to increase the amount of community gardens, but I'm not for destroying what's there now. I think that is a majorly horrible idea. I really wanted that line to be removed, or I'll just have to get too many people to show up with me.
Can you, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can you,
39.
There you go, 39.
And it's on agriculture program elements, and it's number 3.
Thank you for the clarification. We always support a plethora of public comments at all of our opportunities to talk about stuff. So if we do have a lot of people come, we want to be positive feedback, of course, but we understand.
It's just, I don't think you understand the 90-year-olds that are there.
No,
I help them all the time, yes. So.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No, we haven't. Do you have any talks about it?
Yes. A beer?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Jim Dunsbrickman, Vice President of Klein Lines Kid Fishing. As most of you know, we're a nonprofit organization, and we have a fishing derby every April at Klein Line Pond. This year on the 12th, we'll have the special needs event. And on the 13th, we'll have the main event. And we anticipate about 2,000 children will come. And when you add in the volunteers and family members, the total of attendees will probably be around 10,000. I'd like to point out that at the end of the derby, the fish that are remaining, we release the nets, and they're released in the Flying Line Pond for fishing by the general public. We've been doing this for a long time. In the last 3 years, we had to delay it because of the COVID. And since we've come back, where we're trying to rebuild our sponsor base, but our budget's a little strained, and we'd like to request it, a waiver for the parks fee for the 2024 event.
Okay.
And I'd also like to say you supported us in the past, and we appreciate that. And anything you could do to help us this year, we would appreciate that too.
Are you working with Eric Christensen currently on your special use permit?
I'm not, but yes.
Okay, because usually that comes across my desk to sign. I haven't seen it yet. I know it's still a month out. Just to ensure that you know, is that we don't have the authority to waive any fees as a Parks Advisory Board or as me as an employee of Clark County, only our council does. So we would have to bring that item forward if we can get it on the agenda for any waiver of fees. So from a procedural process, we have to go to council to request that. And I believe is the process that was done prior to COVID last year.
Yeah.
It was different. It's sort of a last minute thing where we worked with the president on the fee.
So who would I speak to?
So you speak to me.
Okay.
And it'll be my pail of water to move forward. And if Eric has your contact information, we'll make sure we connect with the person who's applying for the special application to get all the particulars for our staff report.
President's been doing this, but you had a problem, so I'm
right.
Standing in.
Perfect, yeah. So
I'm not exactly sure what happened.
And while we're in this meeting, I will confirm with Eric.
Okay.
Via this little, what do they call them on Star Trek? By the SOM device, yes. That we've got the contact and the information that I would need. And if we don't have anything, I'll make sure you have my email and phone number.
Thank you.
Can I ask just one question? So, So what year did you say? Is that 24, 25? Mm-hmm. Just 24.
Just 24.
Okay. And then how much is the fee?
So for, I believe the fee is supposed to be, this is off the top of my head, so it's not accurate, around $4,000 or $5,000 for 10,000 people that come to an event. They charge a fee. I think it's optional. They waive it, but there is a fee charging, which creates some of those additional fees for our special use program.
Does that include parking?
I believe parking's been waived in the past, and that's.
You have anyone else? Okay. We now have a forum, big roll call, Jim Couch.
Bruce Meyer.
John Jagger.
Janice Van Wyking.
Cool. Have a motion to approve minutes last month. A different mess.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Both passed. Rocky.
Thank you. For the record, Rocky Houston. The bureaucrat for Parks and Rec Division here. So director's update, we got a lot going on. So we've got several master plans and master planning processes underway. We had a public meeting last Wednesday for the Curtain Creek Community Park. We had over 80 people in attendance, so it was a great turnout. We had to find chairs at the high school where we're at. We got great feedback as well from those that were there. And a lot of comments, and I think the minutes, if they haven't been.
They have been.
There.
Published today.
Published today, so we're moving ahead with that. So for those who may not know, it's a 16-acre neighborhood park that is between off of 72nd and 119th. It's going to be the first rugby field in Clark County. So we'll have an artificial turf. We'll eventually have two artificial turfs that will be focused on rugby and soccer. I think how those will to be lined. It'll also have a 4 pickleball courts and a basketball / futsal court. It's going to be phased because things are expensive right now. And our budget will only allow us to do about 3/4 of what we want to do there. So we'll have one field and a shelter, and some additional parking would be part of later phase or phases. But we'll have a walking trail, an amazing play area, playground that's going to have a lot of inclusive play and nature play elements in it. So the design that the teams put together there's pretty cool. It's going to have a dry creek, with a little hand pump that you can and sand. Everyone loves sand if you're into park management, but it's going to have all those sort of elements. We're hoping, I think, to get to construction in 26.
Or 25.
But 25, fingers crossed, went at 25 for that. So it'll be operational at the end of 25 or 26.
Spring of 26 is when we're hoping to open it.
So, and we have, I think we're submitting our land use plan on that, and then we'll be moving forward with the design based off the feedback that we get from there. Anything else to add on that project, Linda? Lindy? We have another meeting coming forward for Hazel Dell. Yeah, let's just have you take over.
Okay, so I'm working on Hazel Dell Community Park. We've been working since 2023 to update the master plan there and also to begin some access improvements where we're going to pave the parking area and we're going to make the trails to the restroom, the park, the picnic shelters, the restroom building, and the play structure or play areas more accessible. We found some accessible routes to those with our consultant. So we had a survey in October, I believe, of last year, where we asked the community what they would like to see in the undeveloped portion of the park, which is along 68th Street, kind of a flag lot. Anyway, so we'll present our master plan concept to the community and then also present the access improvements, share the survey feedback that we had, and let people have a chance to make comments on what they see. But that'll be March 27th at 6 o'clock at Minnehaha Elementary School. And we've already communicated everything, communicated to the public, and we'll start having signs go up tomorrow or Thursday.
Good. And then we have the final master plan for Minnehaha coming out in.
So Minnehaha Neighborhood Park, we're finalizing the preferred concept there. We pretty much have it together. We plan on coming here next month and presenting that preferred concept to you. It won't be our final master plan document, but at least update you on where we're at. And we also hope to have an estimate for that project as well, that we could actually share. We will also, and then we'll finalize our master plan report and then come back with that, the preferred concept, and also the recommendation to change the update the park name to Trillium Neighborhood Park, which is voted on in a survey through our process. So we'll seek adoption of that master plan a little bit later on in the spring.
We also are starting off on the master plan revision or update for construction plans. I guess it's a combination of that for Pacific. So we have pickleball courts there that we did a master plan amendment, and now we're going through the sort of the construction documents design phase for adding additional sports field that was in the original master plan and adding those pickleball courts, which will be to the west of the softball field and to the south of the dog off-leash area. So that'll be something that you're going to see in 24 here, some meetings and work on that. We are planning to have, I think it's April, it's the week of April 10th through the 14th. I think it's the 12th through the 13th is a an open house for Harmony Sports Complex. So actually, David just showed me some 3D renderings today that are unique. You know, when you look at plans all the time and you actually see it with, you know, spatially to where I can visualize it, it's going to be kind of cool looking where we'll have a new access there at 13th Street, 200 paved parking stalls, and then an improvement of the existing access. It's only going to be, what he said. So we won't be able to cross the street either way. It'll be blocked where traffic will flow. So any of you guys know that 192nd between 18th and 1st Street is congested, especially as games and practices get out. So that's
April 10th at Luke Jensen.
April 10th. All right.
Just a quick question on Pacific Park, the new fields. I think they can be baseball diamonds.
No, I believe it's going to be a multi-purpose field that'll be more rectangular in design. We don't know exactly if it's going to incorporate a softball or a baseball implement, but it'll be accommodate more than one activity. Yeah, the original master plan had two additional fields identified to go in there, but where the softball field was placed, it's just a little to the east of where it should be, and that sort of we can only get one field, and so I think that's where it'll be like a soccer slash lacrosse combo with baseball or softball. And we'll come to that. We have Mount Vista Neighborhood Park is a master plan that's getting underway this year, so we have a consultant hired. And so we'll be getting out. So you'll probably see something in the next 6 months or so where we'll start having those public meetings. And David, it seems like I'm missing one more planning.
Klein line.
Yeah, so we're doing a access improvement project at Klein Line pond area, improvements to the bridge surfacing, repair of the bridge footing, access improvements down to the water line focused on people with mobility issues. And we received a Department of Commerce grant for that project, $1.36 million. I believe I mentioned it to the Parks Advisory Board last fall, but there's a number of new faces at the Parks Advisory Board today. So that is a bit of good news for us to get that sort of support from the state. Rocky, the open house for For Harmony is, I typed it into the text or into the chat. It's April 10th at Luke Jensen at 4 p.m. And then also April 22nd at 6 p.m. at Minnehaha Elementary School. There's an open house for the Heritage Farm Wetland Restoration Project. That is a clean water project, but it is it's on our property. So they are hosting an open house to provide an update on where they are on design. They're wrapping up their 60% design drawings.
David, was that March 22nd or April 22nd?
It's April 22nd, sir.
All right. Sorry, I'm looking at a 23 calendar. So that's where I was. I was like, that's a Saturday.
No, it's a Monday night.
All right. Right. And so as Park Advisory Board meetings, if you're not getting emails for these notices coming out, please let us know, because you all should be getting these notices somewhere between 2 to 4 weeks in advance. It might come out and look like a little flyer, electronic version of a flyer that comes in an email. We have a slight stoppage in our work in our replacement of the shelter at Klein Line. So the Pond View shelter has been down for a few years because a tree hit it. We identified a nesting pair of eagles, and so now we're going through the process to ensure that courtship leads to successful. What do they call it when they hatch eggs? Eaglets.
Thank you.
So we're working through that process. There's always a surprise, right? No matter what we do, there's always a surprise. We did get bids back for the Camp Hope water system. And those quotes came in under our engineering estimate, or at least a quote did that was sufficient. So that should be moving forward and getting done this spring, early summer, to update that water system to meet current and future needs and make sure that it meets the standards of the state for clean drinking water. Seems like there's one more project out there that we're working on. Moulton Falls, those bids are...
I think they go out next month, David, they go out, or later this month?
The project, they go out next month, but the project won't start till after July 4th. So, because the bridge will be closed during the repair project.
How long will the project be? How long will it?
3 to 4 months, I believe. So get your hike in now at Moulton Falls.
That pushed against my fall hike that I always do. Seriously, I'll have to get it in, make it a winter hike instead of.
Well, we're trying to repair the bridge to ensure that you continue to have that hike. Yes. We also will be replacing field one's carpet at Luke Jensen. So that's the big field in the back that's baseball and soccer combo. So that carpet will be put down probably in September, which will close that field down for about a month.
We're doing field four this year, field one next year. Sorry to interrupt you. The front soccer field is the one that's being replaced this year.
The smaller, the first one that you go by is to the right.
When you said that, I was thinking, isn't September where all these wreck leaks going on now?
We actually, our peak usage is right now for Luke Jensen. It will impact, of course, and so we're trying to do the least amount of harm. And so our choices right now is the month of May or the month of September. We have to have the temperature at a warm enough to where we can get the glue to stick and when they do it and not rain. And September is always a gamble the last couple of years. And I'm going to say something, I'm going to mess it up. It's been pretty dry through October. But back when I was younger, it was always about the second week of September. It was like school started, rain started. School got out, rain, well, July 4th, it stops. So I think that's a big chunk. We've got six positions open on operations. We had another retirement within the last month. So that's great that someone got to finally go through that that ring of pride and move forward to the next phase. So if you know anyone, apply. We'll be getting these interviews probably set up by the end of the month. And hopefully have everyone, most of those positions filled by June. It's a gauntlet to get all the background checks and all that other stuff going. And that's, we re-engaged our Camp Bonneville group meetings there. So we had a meeting last month and we'll have another one this month. We're trying to have one every month just about to move forward as teams to kind of review the scope of work for cleanup at Camp Bonneville versus what was done and see if there's any continued questions or concerns that then we can put into a report for council to review from a policy perspective. As you all may or may not know, it's a 3,800 acre property that was used as a military base, mainly for training grounds, for about 100 years. And over the last 20 years or so, we've been going through a reuse plan and a cleanup. All of the prescribed cleanup has been completed. Doesn't mean that the whole property is clean, of course. And we're nearing the end of reporting and process to do the site-wide cleanup action plan with the Department of Ecology. So this is an important step to re-engage the community in regards to those concerns that have been raised in the last couple of years and set us up to move to that next step, which hopefully we'll get to a final cleanup, which allows us to then do a master plan to determine what it's going to be when it grows up. And there's a list of things that were defined back in 1996 of what it could be. So more to come on that. And I think that's it. Let me stop talking and turn it over.
Start talking again because you get the bylaws.
Sorry, I've got this old man right here.
The bylaws.
Did you mention
the with you?
Yes, I've not brought that up. So, but we need to get the names of those of you who would like us to get interested in attending so that we can get you.
I already bought my tickets, so for one day.
No mistake.
I love conferences.
But it's a
store.
I like my name.
It's going to be downtown. So before you leave tonight, just make sure Amy has your name and then we'll coordinate with you if we need any more particulars to get you signed up to attend. And it's a 1 day or a 3 day option, essentially. The conference is 4 days, but I think the first day is like a golf. And the last day is just a half day. There's like a keynote speak. So it's Wednesday and Thursday, I think. There's a Tuesday and Wednesday are the big two days for events, and the schedule and all the things are out online, and we can send that to you if you need it to confirm. And our bylaws, thanks for bringing that up, Chair. So we had a subcommittee meet and review our current bylaws. From that feedback, we made some edits to the bylaws and got those out more than 14 days ago to ensure that you had time to review pursuant to the bylaws. The essential changes are modifying some wordsmithing on a few things. Committee members, anything you'd like to add in regards to the subsequent changes to the bylaws?
January 1st.
Yes. Yes. So we moved our election of officers from December, the first December meeting, to the January meeting, because that's when we start new terms. So it seemed to be, as well as it gives us the option to take the holiday off if we so choose. Right now we couldn't. We didn't have that option. We had to meet the second Tuesday of December.
And it also said in there that we didn't count on the 13th, that the ex officio officers from the school districts that have all the different areas.
For the charter, charter says every school district can have an ex officio representative. We've only been inviting two school districts. There is seven or nine school districts in Clark County.
They get like a form letter.
Yeah, we'll be sending them a form letter. Yep.
We updated the officers, the roles and responsibilities, specifically the chair and the vice chair in this, as before we only had an outline of the secretary role. So
you're the most important person here.
Yeah, so as secretary, I thought that they needed recognition as well of the bylaws.
Yes.
Type of thing.
There was a concern raised, I think, from the group and an advisory in regards to making sure that our positions are stair-stepped. And we can address that through recruitments in the future to make sure that we're having all of you not leave on the same day, and a whole new committee potentially that Amy has to train the next year. So if it is our request on your behalf is to make a motion to accept the bylaws as modified, and we will make it so.
I move that we accept the bylaws as presented.
Seconded.
Any communication? Sorry, I'm doing your job.
Right, go ahead. That's right.
Any comments or conversation on the motion that's on the table?
On favor.
Aye.
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 Unanimous.
All right. So moved. All right. So that gets us out of old business now, correct?
No.
And into new business?
No.
Heritage Farm still old business?
Lindy.
Oh, I think that is new. Lindy, it's all yours. Do I need to give you the screen?
No, I think I can share. How's that look? All right. So I'm Lindy Wallach. I haven't met Janice the other day. So I'm the park and trails planner for County Parks and Lands. I've been working on the Heritage Farm project, the sustainability plan development, for just around 2 years now with Rocky and with David. We are in the process of finalizing this plan, and so we brought it here for you today to hopefully receive your recommendation as we move forward to Clark County Council on April 3rd, so next month. We have a work session scheduled with them, and we'll review essentially the same information here. And then hopefully they'll recommend that we come back for a hearing where they'll adopt the plan. Much of this information is the same as what we presented at the at an open house on January 25th. So I apologize if you came to that and you're going to hear me say basically very similar information as what David did on my behalf for that meeting. So I'm going to go pretty quickly because there's a lot of information to share. And if you have any questions, if you can ask me at the end of them, I'm going to try to get through everything as fast as I can. So I'm going to touch on the progress that we've made to date on our plan development, and then I'll review our public engagement results. Then go through just an overview of the plan. We've all received the plan, and hopefully you've had a chance to look at it, or at least the executive summary. And then I'll review our next steps that we intend to move forward to obtain adoption of the plan. So this is a nice little timeline for the progress that we've made to date. There's actually a huge activity that happened just before this, to the left of this line, which is that in March of 2020, the council adopted the master plan update for Heritage Farm. And when they did that, they also basically directed Parks and Lands to develop a business plan for how we were going to increase public access and to reduce the draw on the general fund. That was done with our predecessors. We were not here in 2020 when that happened, Rocky and David and I. And so I think they had a start to the project, and then it didn't mature along. And when we came on board in 2021, we started the project up again. And our first step in that is the first step on the timeline here. And that's that we came to the Park Advisory Board at that time. Teresa and Jim were here at that time, I believe. And then went to the Clark County Council just to reconfirm our project goals, that we needed to increase public access to the farm, that we needed to reduce the draw on the general fund, which is improving financial sustainability for the farm for the long run, while implementing the master plan. We also, at those two meetings, presented a steering committee that we planned to put together. A few of you here today that participated in that. And at those two meetings, we had some tweaks to our steering committee makeup, and that got us started with our steering committee.
We had our first steering committee meeting in the fall of 2022, which seems like forever and a day ago. But we started off with some background information sessions where we reviewed basic background information on the farm, the farm's history, current uses, the expense, so the expenses, financial expenses, and also the potential uses for the farm that we were aware of. We also had a tour, and the whole purpose of those background sessions was to make sure that everybody was on the same page, because we had people on our steering committee who participated at the farm on a daily basis or weekly basis, and then some who just didn't have that level of experience. And I'll go through the steering committee makeup in a little bit. Our next step was that we had an open house in December of 2022, and we also opened a community survey that was open from December to January of 2023. And these things I'll go through in more detail in a second, but just to paint the picture of our progress. We also had, after the open house and the survey was complete, we hosted a steering committee workshop. I think it was in March or April of 2023, where the steering committee worked together in self-selected groups to develop alternatives, which were a combination of programmatic elements and cost recovery options that we had provided to them that they could use to combine those two together to create alternatives that we used. And we took all of the information that the steering committee gave us, and we worked for what some might consider a little too long in putting together our draft sustainability plan. But finally, this past December, we were able to provide the draft sustainability plan to the steering committee for review. We met with them this past January, first week of January, to review the plan, to hear their feedback, and to decide if we were what we needed to incorporate any kind of changes into the plan. We then took that plan with some minor updates to and second open house, which was January 25th. And now here we are today. We've taken all of that feedback. We've updated our draft plan and submitted that to you last week. And we're here to presenting that to you today. All right, so I'm going to go through our public engagement process a little bit. We set up a multi-layered public engagement strategy that we used that focused on the inclusion of voices from current farm partners and folks from the agribusiness, agricultural community at large, and also educational leaders in the community and folks who weren't using the farm. We purposely looked out for folks that we thought could come and utilize the asset that the farm is if there were opportunities available. We engaged the services of a consultant, which was Connoisseur Engineering, and they helped us with the development of that engagement strategy, and they facilitated some of our steering committee meetings and also our first open house. And we engaged the services of Consor because we wanted to reassure the public that we were not trying to influence the outcome of the plans, that we wanted to hear the voices of the steering committee and the public come forward so that we can make the best plan that's of the best use for the community. And so these are the different elements of the strategy that we came together with. The stakeholder engagement, we developed a stakeholders list of over 250 community members over the course of the project. And some of those folks, we started with the folks who had participated in past attempts at plan development, and also folks who just expressed interest to us along the way. We provided regular communication through emails to these stakeholders just to let them know of the progress that we've made on the plan, and then also to let them know when they could participate. So if they could come to an open house meeting, if they could observe a steering committee meeting, or if they came today. Most of you probably received our online list and have received communication that you could come and participate in this meeting as well. The next step is our steering committee, which I've already kind of touched on, but that was made up of a county operations representative, which is Matthew Baum, PAB member, Park Advisory Board member, Teresa participated, Heritage Farm advisory team, Sandy, helped with that. Rob Freed was our primary contact for that, but Sandy helped as well. Christine Perry is with us from WSU Extension, and she participated in the steering committee. We had a representative from Vancouver School District who was a career and technical services program person, a representative from the Clark Conservation District, the NAACP, and then Latinos Unidos, I'm going to say it incorrectly, Unidos, Unidos, window, which, as we better know, is LULAC. Visit Vancouver WA, which is the tourism group here in Vancouver, the Northeast Hazeldell Neighborhood Association, and also Hazeldell Salmon Creek Business Association. We also invited the Cowlitz tribe to participate on the steering committee, but they did decline, although they did agree and participated in a community leader interview, which I'll discuss in just a second. We had a total of six steering committee meetings that we hosted with Consor or on our own, and then the last being this past January when we reviewed our draft plan. As I said, we had two open houses. The first one in December 2022, that first open house, we talked about the sustainability plan development. We reviewed basic information about the farm and the master plan update because we felt that we wanted people to be aware of what that plan, that update included in case that it has been a little while since we had been there to discuss it. And then we also encouraged folks to participate in the community survey that we opened surrounding that open house. And we invited all of the current farm partners to participate in the meeting and not participate in the meeting, but to set up within the room. We had informational stations. And so all of the attendees from that were attending the open house were able to interact with folks who have programs that are in operation at the farm. And I think that was a suggestion that Sandy had, that we should talk more about what's going on there and make people more aware of what was happening at the farm. The community survey, as I said, was open in December of 2022 and closed in early January, and had over 1,100 community members that participated. And we thought that was a great number. In spring of 2023, we had that, I've lost track. Our second open house we had in January, earlier this year, and there we presented our draft plan and we reviewed our survey results and all that good information with the community as well. Consor Engineering conducted 10 community leader interviews, and I'll go through those in a little bit more detail in a couple of slides. And then we had a continuous public comment period that we opened and basically remained open for the duration of the project. In all, we only received 21 total comments, but some of them were 6 pages long. So, and we provided all of those to the steering committee, and they're also included in the plan as an appendix if you want to read them. So a little bit about our community survey. So as I think I said, Consor Engineering conducted our community survey for us, and we had 1,130 participants. We asked people how they've been involved with the farm, and approximately 65% said that they had been a current farm participant, or they had participated in a program at the farm in the past, but 35% had never visited or participated in a program before, because we did a lot of communication of the survey being open and trying to draw people in, because we know that's the intent, is to make people more aware of what's going on the farm, and we wanted to know what can we do for them. We asked the survey questions included the top three master plan priorities for implementation. We asked suggestions for improving the farm, funding sources that we should explore, and also for folks' thoughts on the future of the farm. The top results are shown here on the right-hand side. For master plan priorities, the highest responses were outdoor classroom or shelter and interpretive trails and new greenhouses. And then for activities, new activities and programs, folks are really interested in a farmer's market, public events, and educational opportunities. And for funding sources to be explored, you can see they suggested private contributions, continuing use of the county general fund, and then rental agreements or rental fees, lease fees. The recurring themes that we saw in the survey responses were that Heritage Farm is a unique asset and that should celebrate the county's agricultural roots, and several responses focused on the importance of people learning how to grow food for themselves and also commercially, and we hear that a lot in our public comments as well. Our second theme was that the farm needs better publicity, and we totally are on board with that to increase public use. Comments noted that people aren't really aware of the site and what it offers, and some knew that it was for farmers and gardeners, but that more advertising would help get the greater community involved. The third theme was the new facility should be considered, but not with Not if we're going to displace what's already there. Respondents were interested in an outdoor classroom or accessible trails, but they didn't want us to remove existing farm space. And then finally, they wanted us to explore additional sources for funding, but they wanted us to recognize that this is a public space that's always going to require some public funds. All right, and so for our community leader interviews, so also, as I said, Consular Engineering interviewed 10 community leaders. The list is here on the left. I'm going to read that one for you right now. But the purpose of these interviews was to gather perspectives from community members who share an interest in the farm and to learn more about opportunities and constraints for the project as we were still starting to develop it. Some of the themes that we learned is that the farm is cherished, but some do worry about its future. We heard that we need to honor the history of the poor farm and the site's agricultural heritage, and also that we really need to keep in mind that it's an important piece of real estate, and that we need to proceed with care and caution to make sure that this plan brings value to the community. We also heard that even though observers frequent the site aren't familiar, even folks who frequent the site aren't necessarily familiar with everything that goes on there. Maybe they work in with the food bank or master gardeners, but they're not really certain what else is going on in other locations on the farm. Their preferred future for the farm is to continue and to expand on assorted activities. We had a suggestion of stop talking about what the farm is now and talk more about what it could be, because it's an underrealized opportunity for the community. And folks generally concurred with our with the council's goals for the site, which is for us to implement, or for the project, which is for us to implement the plan, improve public access, and improve financial sustainability. So now I'm going to go through the plan in a little bit more detail. I'm going to talk about public process, the context that we included surrounding Heritage Farm, and financial analysis. I'm not going to rehash the public process because I've already more or less gone through that. But for context surrounding Heritage Farm, we did look at cultural and historical resources as well as current uses. This is all information that was provided to the steering committee and then also considered as we finalized this draft. We reviewed past planning studies such as the master plan and its update. We looked at the PROS plan, which is the comprehensive parks plan. We looked at WSU Metro Center's operational recommendations plan that was provided in 2022. We used all of those documents as we put this plan together. We conducted a financial analysis, which I think was not always well received by our steering committee. In the beginning, it seemed like people really wanted a lot more details, which is sometimes difficult to do in government. We don't necessarily have the same Quicken systems that that you might have for your private business. But we were able to share that the parks and lands averages about $170,000 a year in expenses to operate the farm. And that's to operate the farm. It's not anything to do with the agreement with WSU. And then we also got some information on the volunteer contributions from Heritage Farm Advisory Team. Sandy in particular provides this information for us. But as an example, in 2022, 17,832 volunteer hours were recorded, and an additional $442,774 in donations were provided for farm projects. And that resulted in almost 100,000 pounds of fresh produce being donated to the Clark County Food Bank, which is valued at like $179,000. But it's not just the produce that's produced. There's a lot of other programs that people are volunteering for and a lot of other benefits for the community at large as well. We tried to represent in our plan as well. And just a note here that we consider the sustainability of the farm as the ability of the farm to continue to provide these services, the same programs, while we're seeking strategies to reduce that general fund obligation that is coming from our need to manage the land, the equipment, and the labor that it takes to help with the farming activities. We also conducted a site analysis. We looked at environmental use zones, and topographic constraints, fallow land, surrounding land use, and agricultural production feasibility. There's three zones that we identified that are shown here. Zone one, which is ag operations and support, takes up about 19 acres. fallow land and slopes that are less than 15% take up about 37 acres, and encumbered land is about 23 acres. We recognize there were steep slopes on the southern portion of the site, which can limit crop types. We know that's not the only necessarily consideration for topography on the farm, but we know that it can limit the types of crops that are grown and also the equipment that would take to construct or to allow those crops to be grown. For fallow land, we realize that the areas that are around Cougar Creek, which is what the wetland restoration area that cuts across the property at the north end, that land has been inactive or unused for a lengthy period of time, which can create issues with weeds and other soil nutrient issues. And we looked at farming in an urban area and how that surrounding land use impacts the type of agricultural activities you can have on the site. It's not necessarily great to have a dairy farm here. And also the pool of farmers who might be willing to come and farm the land could be reduced because of that urban environment. You might not have a nearby farm that you can have like an economy of scale to move back and forth, or it's more difficult to move around the urban area than it is in a more rural area. But the property is a high value agricultural site because of the high quality soils that we have, and then also there's on-site water availability. All right, so alternatives. As I said, so back in the spring of last year, we worked with the steering committee to put together those alternatives in our workshop. There were six different groups that were self-selected. They came up with a set of alternatives based on those programmatic elements and the cost recovery elements. And then when we went back in that long period of time and analyzed that, we realized that there was a lot of consistency between what the groups selected. A lot of the similar programmatic elements, not all the same, but very closely related or aligned, and then also the same with the cost recovery options. So we have narrowed those down into alternative three, which I'll go through last. But we also included alternative one, which you might think of as like a same, where we're making minimal changes, and alternative two, which some folks on the steering committee had interest in, which would be a nonprofit or a third-party non-governmental organization managing the farm. So when we look at alternative one, there were many current farm partners, folks that are using the farm right now, that express interest and continue to operate the farm with little or no change. And this alternative one follows in that spirit, but that does incorporate some modifications to the revenue generation options that we identified, that planning staff identified and the steering committee discussed. Alternative does fall short, though, of meeting both the financial and public access goals that were set forth by the council. However, there was interest in the steering committee to keep it as being considered as part of the alternative analysis. Alternative two, we had a few members, as I said, of the steering committee that were interested in an alternative, including management by a third-party non-governmental organization or nonprofit. And this would require a request for proposal be issued to seek selection of an organization that would operate the farm. This alternative was largely discounted by steering committee members, because there's a lot of unknowns that come along with identifying and negotiating and contracting with a non-governmental agency. And then the primary challenge would be the identification of a partner with that financial capacity to operate the farm in a manner that meets the guiding principles of the master plan, and that wouldn't have to utilize a county-provided subsidy. They need to come in with all of the capital to make the capital improvements to execute the master plan otherwise, and then also to maintain it in the long run. And I think some of the committee members had experience where that had not worked out in the past. I don't have any examples to provide, but alternative three, as I said, is the amalgamation of those six alternatives where they selected similar programmatic and revenue generation options. This alternative proposes the inclusion of a fully open public access facility so that Heritage Farm could function more like an agriculturally focused community park. People get really nervous when we say park and farm at the same time. Recreation elements would be separated from the active ag areas, though, through purposeful design. Operational expenses would be primarily shifted to the Metropolitan Park District, And I can go into that in the next next slide. And that's the fund that we use for neighborhood parks and community parks. So it would make it open to that source of funding, which would then be able to take some of that off of the general fund. And it would also help provide access to staff outside of the farm specialist that would be able to help with ongoing maintenance needs. And we found that alternative three meets all of the criteria and the project goals. And although it may not entirely offset the draw on the county's financial resources, it would decrease or potentially eliminate the need for the general fund. So here's a look at alternative three. We have three categories of the programmatic elements. The red is agricultural, purple is educational, and recreational is orange. And I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. They are further defined in the plan if you want to take a look at them. For agricultural, the first one is WSU Extension Services, which I guess is kind of educational as well. It's hard to define agricultural education and education. But anyway, we decided that we were not going to have any alternatives that did not include WSU Extension Services, that was a no-go. And so it was included in all of the alternatives. We had suggestions for Inc. And I'm going to say these came from survey results. These came from council members making comments at past meetings. They came from possibly park advisory board meetings, from HVAC meetings, where people just had all of these ideas for what could happen at the farm. And we gave folks a nice laundry list of things that they could use, and they could also add things to them if they thought that we had missed something. So this is what was selected from those lists. So incubator farming program, community gardens, agricultural lease space, which is predominantly what we see out there, agricultural research lease space, food production for underserved communities, which is what we see at the food bank, farm stand or vendor lease space, horticulture education programming. The next two are from the master plan, which is a multi-use building for private and public events, farm events programming, and farm park amenities. And farm historic tours, which are already going on, that the master gardeners host, as well as composting education that the county hosts, and continuing agricultural education for adults, and farm table programming, which I think is near and dear to Sandy's heart. For educational, we have a community outdoor classroom, which is, if you might remember, was one of the most popular things from the survey, and school district programming. We really want to see every kid from the school district out at the park, the farm at some point in time, learning where their food comes from and what they can do in the future to help continue that, the effort that the farm is making to improve the community. For recreational programmatic elements, we have community trails open to the public, which were already included in the master plan. But we have one that we added, which is a children's play area, which probably makes some of the people cringe because I think there's less interest from the steering committee for having a play area out there. But we recognize in our experience that when you have a play area, you bring families to your facility, they're spending time there, they're looking around, they're saying, oh my gosh, maybe I could explore and learn more about this place. And so we're hopeful that's what would happen if this moves forward. For cost recovery elements, we have the general fund, so some continued use of the general fund, that Metropolitan Park District fund that I talked about a little bit earlier, lease adjustments and fee for farm services, I'll talk about on the next slide. Friends of the Farm fundraising, they're really ready, I think, to gear up a little bit more for fundraising as soon as we have the plan in place and they understand where we're going in the future. Educational Institute Partnership, which might be tricky because there's not always a lot of money around in education. Grants and donations, this would open the farm up to more grant opportunities. And then revenue percentage from sold items might be like at the plant sale. We have a portion of that comes to the county. And we added this final one, which is the Vancouver Clark County Leaf Litter Composting and Sale Program, which I'm happy to talk about if you have a question, but I'm not going to go into a bunch of details about it right now. But it does have a good potential for offset of our expenses. All right, so here's a look at the next steps. These are a little bit abbreviated, but from our plan. The first is to continue to improve the relationships with the existing farm partners. That's something we've been trying to do along the way, listening to people, hearing what they say, and make sure we're considering it in our decision making. improving inclusion and also improving inclusion and equity and farm access to historically underrepresented groups in the community. This is something that we started on this project, and we intend to include as a portion of everything that we do going forward, with really reaching out into the community further than we have in the past. And kind of tied to number one, build on the trust that's developed during the development of this plan. So we, at the beginning of the project, it was really hard to have conversations with people because they really didn't trust us. They didn't think we're going to finish the plan. They didn't think that we had the best interests of people in mind. But I think over time, that things have really improved. And we can see that in the difference between the first open house and the second open house and the first and second steering committee meeting and the last steering committee meeting. I think that we're in a better place at this point. And we hope to continue, not hoping to continue, we're going to make that continue. We'd also be exploring additional farm partner relationships. But anytime anybody is going to come into the farm, we need to compare that to the master plan and make sure that we're meeting those. There's a set of guiding principles in the master plan. We want to make sure that any new programs align with that. Rocky, I think, is working on the next two, which is to finalize a land lease program to make sure that we recoup the county's costs. So we're actually breaking even, I think, hopefully, eventually we will. Maybe that's the intent. No. But as he's told me, we can't give things away. And so he's doing it.
Yeah. Well, we recognized early on that any of the models out there don't have 100% cost recovery. And that's not the objective here. However, with the trying to balance it thing is we have a gifting of public funds, constitutional requirement limitation in the state of Washington. That is something we are considering. So we're walking through that path in our leases to make sure that they're fair and equitable, given all the paradigms we have to deal with. And as we move forward, continue to recognize that we'll never generate funds from this, but there's many other things that this is generating that are more important than just dollars for the community. And so that's why looking at these alternative funding mechanisms provides us, relieves a little pressure from general fund and allows us to continue to figure out how to promote it to the community and keep those programs going.
And then the next is a develop a fee for service program. So in very basic terms, I think it means if you need me, you should never ask me to come and till your land, your space, that we would have a dollar amount established for what that might cost per hour or for half a day's work or something like that.
And so through the Metro Plan study the WSU did in 21-22, when it came out, there was a lot of review, similar stuff that went through. And Mount Vernon is a similar site in ways that WSU manages. It's another research ag site north of Seattle, right? Mount Vernon's in Seattle. Sorry, I'm from south of the river, so I'm still making sure I'm getting the place names. Mount Vernon, Oregon's a different place. But anyways, they have a fee structure there. And so that was a model that that we're looking at to emulate based off of what fits here.
Next, we have analyze current cost sharing and operational relationships. And then the next two are tied together, which is develop a first phase of public access improvements and also to develop a plan to address concerns associated with that increase in public access. And we're actually already getting started with that. We're going to have participate in a listening session at a Thursday farm partners meeting where we will present some information about our intentions for increasing public access and then listen to the concerns that folks have. And we can use those as we move forward into design, which we have not begun, but design of those access improvements. And then finally, explore additional revenue operation options, which is that Vancouver Park leafletter thing, which I can explain if you ask me a question about it. So I am limited time. Okay, so finally, more next steps, but these are how we're going to get the plan addressed. And I'm really happy that my arrow here only has three dots on it at this point. It's exciting. So after this meeting, as I said, we have a work session scheduled on April 3rd with the Clark County Council, where we'll be presenting a lot of the same information to them. And then we hope that if they give us the go ahead, that we will have a hearing that's scheduled in September, or in spring of 2024, where they will adopt the plan, and then we can continue on. This is ongoing because we've already started a lot of these next steps, but begin implementation of the plan. So I just want to say I went through that very quickly. It's a lot of information, and I don't want you to think that I went through it because I just want to get through it. If you have any questions, I love to talk about it. It's just a lot of information. I want to make sure I give you everything I can so you can give us the best feedback that we can. And that's all I have.
Other questions?
I want to say you did a hell of a job with this thing. Yeah, this has been a long slog for you. You've done an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. I just want to thank Teresa and Sandy and Christine for participating in a lot of hard discussions and meetings and relationship building over the last 2 years. And also, I really appreciate Rocky and David most of the time. They give me great advice. And it's been a learning process, I think, for all of us, especially me. I'm really glad. I'm proud of what we've done. If you have any hard questions, I'm here to.
Could you bring up the screen where you have the alternative three?
This one?
Yeah, that one. You made a comment about the Education Institute of Partnership. They said there's no finite in that.
So
can you explain how you came to that conclusion?
So our feedback that we received from our steering committee is that that is actually, under cost recovery elements. Educational Institute Partnership. Most of the folks from our steering committee or several had feedback, and we had someone from the Vancouver School District on our steering committee who indicated that, you know, the school district has a shortage of funds almost always. And I think you can see that now where they're going to cut 200 jobs. So having extra funds to participate in that in something like this might not be feasible, but it might be feasible at Clark College or maybe other programs at WSU. Those are things that we could definitely explore.
Sure. The reason that I thought about that is, I mean, I'm new here, so there's certain things I don't understand. I don't take that position. I'm just thinking. Because I see that we have a growth in private institutions in our county, including just this one. And in Battleground, I know the public school there has, of course, there was a Chem Academy, which was kind of a magnet school, but there's another one. I'm going blank on one. Where the kids were interested in science. My daughter went to that, I'm forgetting the name of it.
I think they do it at the Casey Center.
The Casey Center. So I'm thinking a Casey Center model, but for some of these private schools, have we approached them to see if they would be interested in something like this?
So we haven't done any approaching for anything like this, since these are ideas and a plan of things that we can research and try to move forward with in the future. And I think if folks approached us, we would definitely have conversations with them.
I think the elephant in the room is to lift alternative three, if that's what it does get approved, off the ground, is requires staff and people and bandwidth. And in a perfect world, we'd have a person or two who's beating the brush, coordinating, writing grants, doing this stuff. And right now, we, the county and our partners, we don't have that dedication of funding or staff time for that. And I think that's an Achilles heel to really implement a lot of these things. And so as such, what we try to do is create a framework that was flexible and we could add on to and kind of be like glue, you know, things that get stuck that continues the core mission, but can grow and provides framework and but flexibility. And I think that's the,
I guess I'm just making a comment that I would like us to perhaps find a way not to be dismissed to that opportunity this early. Because when I hear there's no opportunity, I feel like there are opportunities. We just haven't looked at them.
Sure. I appreciate your feedback. And we wouldn't put this in here and not think that there is some potential opportunity to it. We just, the feedback that we've received right now makes it seem like that might not.
There's not a turnkey shovel ready program where the school district is saying, hey, we have our third grade curriculum that requires us to go out and look at tadpoles, and the farm is a tadpole place. And so that's what we're supposed to say here. Is that,
I understand. I think last but not least, it's if you want to get the alternative, I think it's the right one. Because there's something you said that's really interesting. So the comment that came from people is that stop talking about what the heritage farm was, but what it can become. The other two alternatives, they don't tell us anything about what it can become.
this one does. So I think this is the one. From everything that I've learned.
Can we poke you at the council? Actually, could you probably make a public comment?
I want to be careful. If you made a comment, that can.
Oh, that came from a community member.
So what I'm doing is putting it together. Then if I take one and two, it doesn't speak to this. This one speaks to this. So from marketing standpoint, that's our thing. We want to look at Harold Farm and what can become, not what it was or what it is.
Sure.
So what it can become is what that's said here.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of the same theme of what we've been going through this project is people had certain impressions of the farm or what might become long ago, and they had a hard time, I think, letting go of that in the beginning and talking more openly about what we can move forward with. There was just a lot of concern at the beginning of the project, and now.
But I understand that. I mean, no one likes, many people, including myself, I don't like change. You know, I always tell people, my wife, I said, I'm not getting divorced because I don't want change. I get it. But I think there are possibilities that we can preserve the heritage, but embrace the future. And I think that's what we need to sell our kids, because I can promise you, the Gen Zs and the millennials, they don't want to. They couldn't care less about what it was. Mm-hmm. They care about what the future promises. So
right.
I'm very excited about Children's Wheel. Thank you so much for your
work. Oh, thank you for the feedback.
Yes. Very exciting. I think extremely thorough in the way that it was approached and methodical in terms of bringing people in. Really excited about bringing new people in the park, especially like the children's play area, because I know anything to bring families in and other people into the experience the park or the farm,
yeah.
Heritage Farm. So. Very much aligned with that to make sure that anyone from the community can have access to property. So this is all very exciting. And I think that the way you've reached out to the community has been very thorough. So great work.
Thank you.
Are we asking any action tonight?
We're just asking for recommendation. Move forward.
As far as adopting the preferred alternative.
So the council would make that final decision, but to recommend, I guess, your support of the document as we move forward.
Well, I was very impressed reading through it. I even read some of those letters from the different people and their opinions, and I thought they'd given it a lot of thought, you know, particularly like the ones that, well, don't move the community plots. We've improved the soil there. You don't make a stone all over, which I thought had a lot to... That was a real gardener saying that. I know
she's right.
She never should prove yourself. But I get going
in that. It's in the new draft with the
county. Yeah. The new reality in this county is more and more people in apartments, which means more and more need for those poor people stuck in apartments to have a garden. So I'm hoping that this, and I couldn't find it. I'm not saying it's not there. I couldn't see that there were plans to expand the community garden area, including for older people who could garden from a chair, leaning over the raised things. But I hope there are plans for that, because it would just get to be a bigger and bigger thing as time goes on.
Sure. And in our latest draft that we sent last Friday, we did amend our next steps. The one about increasing public access, and we kind of described that just a little bit further. Including the expansion of the community gardens. I'm sorry, that would always include an accessibility chair as we move forward. We would design that with that in mind.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. And if you end up having it be sort of like a destination education day field trip for all the grade schools, like they do when they send them to CISPUS, that's like the other half, the wild and where did your food come from?
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's nice gardens.
Much work it takes.
Don't limit yourself to 1 80-acre site. I think we have other properties where we can not have the same number of plots, but we have some other properties where we could incorporate community gardens. You know, I think that takes time. I know we have a few plots at Pacific Park. Currently, and we have some other properties where, as we move forward with interest, we can replicate those. So, spread that around the community so we have a close involvement committee for working even.
Are we allowed to have questions from the public?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
More about education. I won't say anything.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So technically, we had our public comment period, but if you have a comment you'd like to make, feel free.
Started, and then I gave them walking onions, and it was a really cool thing. And then Farm to Fork, the National Garden and Foundation funded, and then that went away, but they would bus. And then a lot of the private schools, even last summer, were still bringing in kids and exploring. There was like five different stations about the pond and completely walking to the community garden. And yeah, I just wanted to say that I agree. And also a very good job.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. I appreciate it. We've had some hard conversation, but we're making our way, right?
So you're asking us to
make a motion to move the plans forward to council.
So I've read the thing through a couple of times, various iterations. So, and I'm sorry, page 39, number 3, I didn't, it's not that cool, it's being dark, so, but not really minutia. Is there a way to
accommodate
that somehow?
We'll take a look at that.
Okay.
And with that caveat,
so just so you guys know, so we're going to go to council for a work session. We're going to get additional feedback from council, which may create edits to the document, and then we would move it forward in its final version for adoption to council. So as such, the feedback we're hearing tonight, the feedback we hear from council can be modified in the document.
So I move that we move this as is forward to the workshop.
The work session?
Work session.
Thank you, Doug. Excited to hear what the council has to say.
Thank you. I am too.
It'll be interesting. okay. Any other comments? Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Is there more in the work session?
The work session is scheduled for
April 3rd
at 10 a.m. or 1 p.m.
Okay.
I think it's 10 a.m. I think
we will
council time's 1 p.m. So I think it's 10 a.m.
So
it's at 10.
Okay, part of what we're doing in our stakeholder engagement is that we will be notifying everyone of the meeting, more details about it as we get them moving forward. So you would receive an email a couple of weeks beforehand.
And just so people know, as work sessions, public are able to come and it's recorded and you can stream live as well, but there's not public comments at those meetings. At the hearing where the adopt is, where public comments would be come in. All the praise for Lindy and the work she's done. And, you know, you can write it in as well too.
So first there's this workshop with them.
Yeah.
Right. Work session.
Work session.
And I think you're allowed to make comments at the beginning of that session, but we could be much later in the agenda. We don't know, is what David had explained.
But then later,
is that right? And edits are made.
I think council time allows public comments, but I don't believe work sessions. But I'm wrong 30% of the time.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm right.
Well, I blame my
boss. I got. But. And I think what confuses at the work session is that usually there's a public health meeting that is before. So it's actually two different meetings that occur simultaneously a lot of times. So I think that's potentially where public comments occur as part of the health board, but not work session.
Okay. Well, you can view everything online.
Yep. You can stream it on your old cable TV, whether that's CCTV.
Yeah.
You can watch it live on your computer. You can go to YouTube and watch it. So we are done with agenda. We do have in a round table, we wanted just to give a follow-up instead of doing it during the director's update, and that's in regards to our memorial and tributes policy. And so we have some discussion. So as we communicated before, and I think Dave is going to take this over, but I'll set the stage. We were working on a draft policy. We identified that the foundation was a partner who was kind of handling off all the PR side of memorials and tributes. And they don't have the capacity to do that. And so we're going to honor all those that have been submitted, and we've been kind of putting on hold for the last year or two, which is quite a few. But then moving forward, I think we're wanting to have a deeper discussion in regards to what our role is, given what other communities are doing with that type of engagement with the public. David?
I don't have much more to add, except for it boils down to capacity. So if we don't have the foundation as a partner to do the paperwork, we simply don't have a lot of freeboard to add another program to manage in the planning and development section, nor in the operations section. I think right now I've got a dozen requests for memorial benches, and other municipalities of similar size have a planner that deals with that half time, and we don't have that luxury without the partner. So this has been a long slog for those of you who were involved in the first conversation about this. So I apologize for not being able to close this out. But as Rocky mentioned, we'll go ahead and work through the backlog of requests and then not take any more requests until, well, pardon me. My suggestion is that we work through the requests that we currently have and not take any more requests until we can work with the foundation to reestablish the partnership. And that likely won't occur until they have an executive director and some of their sort of long range planning squared away. So I'd like to just hear some thoughts on that approach to just mothball it for now. I know that the city of Vancouver isn't doing memorial or tribute items in their parks anymore. And it is it is driving most of those requests to us. And without the partner, I just don't see a really productive, efficient path forward.
Right, we're going to make tough choices.
Well, I thought there was a CEO for the Thomas Foundation.
So I believe they have hired a new executive director. I believe you are correct in that. I did meet her, but I believe that they're working on a new direction and bigger capital projects potentially. So,
I mean, that's been a little big.
Right. And so for every memorial bench as it currently sits, we spend 15 plus hours on coordinating and working through the ordering and all the process for any procurement that we have. Our team then has to install it. We're always trying to, some parks we have more benches than we need because we were accepting everything in the past. And so is our capacity of maintaining those in the future. So there's operational. I know City of Portland moved to a thing where you donate money into a pool that replaces and does stuff like that. So there isn't this same level of personalization. I know other communities, smaller towns that I've seen, they have all kinds of benches that they plunk to put down their main street and things like that to make it different. And so I think we're just at that tipping point of making decisions. Do we spend this the FTE to work on Heritage Marks of Stanley plan or building a new park or replacement or focus on this? And it there is a benefit to the community. It's just trying to balance those things out. And so we want to take a pause, make sure we deal with our backlog. And then if we do reassess what it looks like for us, is it change? You know, we talked about trying to move it to Memorial Tree Program instead of Memorial Bench, because again, that has a less workload for us and is longer lasting that. So, I mean, there's some things that we're, I think we're still looking at. We're still looking at other communities, but we're just trying to be upfront. And if we're at the point with our staffing level, trying to decide what's more important to you, to the community.
So what are we telling the people that are calling up and saying, I want a memorial bench? We're just saying the program is...
Yeah, we're not accepting any new memorial bench this time.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, until the Parks Foundation. Yeah,
yeah, it's the park.
I mean, back with the limb was there. I mean, that's, they do a lot of stuff.
But still, it's... As you say, it's a lot of FTE hours. You start penciling out exactly what it costs to maintain a bench and do all this, not just the money they give us to put the bench in. Then they kind of walk away, and then it's forever.
And then a tree drops on it.
In other jurisdictions I've been, and I've had all those horror stories, so we put one up, spent a lot of time getting it in the right spot, get all the permitting, and then the forest fire came through and disappeared. We've had it to where cars have hit it, you know, kids scratching it out and having to replace things quite quickly. And so we know there's always, and those that have been there for a long time until it fades all the way, you know, we've had success stories. And so each one of those creates a point of poor customer satisfaction.
I think the tree idea is good because, you know, the goal is to have more tree canopy in Vancouver, so in Buck County. So that would be a win-win.
Okay. They put a tree that can stand climate change.
Yeah.
There are certain species there.
Urban foresters, I think there's just an article in the paper about that they're looking at redoing their, if you go on urban forestry, that's like where trees are acceptable for the street trees, your yard trees, that list has got to change because of that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of work going in that direction. And of course, this still doesn't mean that if Bala wants to donate $1 million for that we won't talk to you about that, you know, managing 15 or 20 park benches a year really does start to change our workload and workflow. So thanks for bringing this forward, David.
On the surface it seems like a really simple thing, but it is not. In I think most cases, we may have to do the installation through a small works solicitation because our operations staff doesn't have time to do the installation of the bench and the pouring of a concrete pad, because our goal is to make these benches handicap accessible, and then the procurement of the plaques. It is 20 benches a year could end up being, you know, a half-time job, and we just, without a partner, and time, it's just something that I would like to put a pause on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Without a partner, I know there's something that is a benefit to the community, but without having my labor on the side of actually getting it up and running and the risks and all that. So I think it makes sense to mothball it's something that we continue to discuss later. It is something that I think is valuable, especially because it's equitable for not just a person with $1 million to be able to make their mark on the park, but and without the feasibility of it, then focus on, I think, for the background for now.
But two more roundtable items to think about as we move forward. So the first is in is it May? I believe May is when the annual luncheon for the foundation comes up. So we're buying a table as we've done the last couple of years. So we'll do the little not me or me task, however we draw straws, but we'll have a chair or two, probably two seats there for Parks Advisory Board members. So it's always an interesting presentation and launching thing. I think it's still going to be down on the waterfront of the field this year, the same place it was last year. So go about an hour early to find parking.
AC Hotel, not the Hilton though.
Yeah, and I think that's where it was last year. Yeah, they're on the waterfront.
The menu was full. The grill was full.
Oh, yeah. And then in June, we will not be having a meeting like this. We will be having a field trip meeting. So we'll be coordinating that. And that's partially because someone else has booked our room. So to be transparent. And I think that's feedback from you guys is that we can put it on a different day. We can do it earlier in the day with daylight saving times. I mean, I think when we did it before, we did it earlier and it was a little bit longer. We'll have a van or two that we probably connect here someplace, and then we would tour, and we'll be looking at our new projects, new properties. So we'll have a list, you know, three or four stops, probably something that'll, you know, takes 8 hours, but we'll squeeze it into three or four. The usual sort of van tour. Don't eat too much before you go because you might get car sick as we're trying to get to the next stop.
I don't hike.
You don't hike.
I put that
on. You know, yes, I compromise.
But you can walk.
Let me tell you what. Anyone's walking. I was hiking. I don't have my hiking.
We will only make you walk a little bit. Most of these will be developed sites. We have we're moving forward on the two acquisitions. I forgot to talk about that before, the 65th Court and the 50th Street. So council approves the purchase and sale agreement on the 50th. We've ordered an appraisal. We've got the appraisal back on the 65th Court now. It's with our review appraiser. I don't know what the price is or any of that stuff. My people don't tell me those things. I just know it's in process. It's not real until the review appraiser uses it. So we're hoping to have another six or seven acres there added into the MPD. We're also looking at some other interesting acquisitions that would benefit the community recreationally. I'll just say it's near water. So fingers crossed that the appraisal and the process moves forward successfully. So we'll continue to try to beat the brush and find. If anyone knows of 40 acres, 20 acres, 10 acres within the urban growth area of the city of Vancouver or near it, don't have them go to a realtor. Have them come talk to Ron because I'll give you market value. So we are continually looking for property. We met with a neighborhood association just outside the urban growth area trying to find a park space for them. And it's difficult. You know, we don't have dedicated funding for acquiring property outside of the urban growth area. And that's problematic as we continue to grow as a community. So that's all I have at have.
You said within the urban growth?
Yeah, so our Greater Clark Park District boundary is the urban growth area of the city of Vancouver. Oh. And so our park improvement fees are only within that area. Our Greater Clark Park District funds are going to be attributed within that area or benefit those within that area. And so that's the limiting factor that outside that boundary, it's all general fund parks. With that, our main capital fund is REIT 2, which is real estate excise tax when you sell property. That can't be for to buy property. It can only be to sort of do major maintenance and sometimes create new assets. But a lot of it's being used to maintain what we have in place, playgrounds, restrooms, asphalt.
It's also shared.
Yes, we don't get it all. We're sharing it with transportation and clean water. Now, part of REIT there's REIT one and REIT two funds. I know it's all complicated. REIT one is dedicated for some other things. So we compete annually for our allocation of those funds based off our capital improvement plan, which you guys will start to see versions of in the late spring. And then we'll have that public process during the summer.
Do we have anything else? I would like to say thank you for the Kirk Creek going forward.
Yeah,
is there nothing else? Returned by
I just want to, for what I've seen, stuff. I mean, when I saw all those people, I give you guys so much credit.
Yes.
Just get that many people at night when it's cold to come, and he saw he was really in a great place.
I'd like to claim responsibility for that because we didn't do a lot of effort to try to get to draw people in, but at that meeting we had a lot of folks who were interested in rugby, and so I think a lot of those people then communicate and bring each other in, which is great to see too.
No, it's all Lindy. Our last meeting
next year. Okay. Yeah.
Our last public meeting we had for Curtain Creek, we had one participant. It was all virtual, so now they're in person, but it is. It's all there.
Don't forget to sign in. I realize I apologize for all the scribbling in. There's a sign-in sheet over there. You can sign in. That'd be great.
And then tell Amy if you want to go to WRPA.
Okay, so I've already paid. Can I get reimbursed over my?
Sure.
Oh, good. Okay.
Bring the receipt here.
Secondly, I'm I'd like to go for luncheon.
Because that's one of the questions. Other than it, which it is.
All right, everyone. I am.
I can see it.
Doing something. Well, it's all that stuff in your
report. But I was just thinking about.
I don't want to
talk. Please. What is that?